Thank you, Elena Struthos, for coming to my podcast today.
Thank you for having me.
It's good to have you on my side of the fence for a change. I know that you yourself are a podcaster.
Yes.
And I've seen a few of your podcasts. Not all of them, I'm ashamed to say, but you're doing good work bringing interesting, innovative, tech-based knowledge, ideas, people to the general public. Let's start with that. Let's start from that point. I want you to tell me a little bit about what you're doing, why you're doing it, how it started, what kind of guests you have.
Okay. Yeah. So the podcast is called Breaking the 20%. Mm-hmm. And it's about the history of women in tech and women in tech in general. Mm-hmm. So the first season was in Greek. Now we're doing it in English, mm-hmm. The second season. And basically, we do two things. Mm-hmm. The first one is I have a guest, and then I tell them a story from the history of, computers and technology. Mm-hmm. It's about a woman usually, and they are commenting on the story that I'm telling.
Yep.
That's the first part. The second part is basically interviews with interesting women. So, yeah.
Interesting women in tech or yes. interesting? Okay, we're interesting women in tech. Yeah. All right, first of all, I want to start with 20%. What's 20%?
That's the number of IT degrees that go to women in general in the Western world. And also that's about the percentage of women that are working in tech.
Okay, 20%.
Yes.
Has that gone up or down over the last few years, or is it still hovering there?
It's been like that for many, many years. Mm-hmm. It was much, much better because it started off as a women's profession. So in the beginning, there were only women in the 40s and the 50s.
Why is that?
You need to listen to the episodes then.
Has it got anything to do with the fact that the men were busy somewhere else?
So basically, before computers were machines,
yep.
they were people. Mm-hmm. So there were people doing mathematical, solving mathematical problems mm-hmm. by hand on paper. And mm-hmm. they did things like calculating trajectories for missiles and all kind of this stuff. Mm-hmm. And there were women mm-hmm. who weren't doing this. So when they built the machines, it was only naturally to give the job of programming the machine to women. Mm-hmm. And for many years, it was like that until it became more, it got status. And when it got status,
the men took over.
Yes.
Well, that was around late 50s, maybe, or earlier?
1984.
1984 was when it turned.
That's when the percentage started going down.
That late? I had no idea.
It started from the 60s, you know. But that's the point. We know that the rate of women going into tech started falling dramatically. And that's it went, and in the early 2000s, it went up to 10%.
Okay. I'm wondering if it's a... I'm trying to think what happened. And I mean, other than it being fashionable for men, but was there anything like maybe men were doing a breaking the 20% to get men into the industry and that was super successful?
No? There are more than one reasons. Okay, no. There are many reasons. But part of the reason is that... when we got personal computers, mm-hmm. those were all marketed to boys. Mm-hmm. So you start in, getting this association that computers are from boys. And then you go to the university and, the boys know how to use the computer. The women don't know, but it looks like it's a natural talent, but it's not. It's just, exposure. That's part of the reason. The more dark answer is that women were profiled out because in the 60s, when this thing was new and there were no degrees yet, they were looking for ways to evaluate who would be a good programmer. So they hired one of the companies, the first company, they hired these two male psychologists mm-hmm. to create a profile, okay? And they... At a time where there were many women, more women than men, they decided to interview 1,200 men, 200 women.
Right.
And they created a profile that chooses antisocial, uh-huh. Loner,
yep.
men. So it's the profile, of the geek, the loner, the mm-hmm. antisocial guy. That comes from that research. So they applied this test. They hire more men. And then it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. The more men you get in with that have this profile, yep. the more it looks like these are the people who should be doing this.
Do you think that here we are in 2024, do you think that the tide is starting to turn? Do you think that women are coming back to the industry? Is it opening up to them more now?
No.
No, so we have a lot of work to go
still. No, and it's not a Cyprus problem. It's mm-hmm. not a European problem. It's a Western world problem. Because if you go to the Eastern Bloc, mm-hmm. you know, former Soviet Union countries, or even in the Arab world, mm-hmm. it's not like that.
Really? Why is that?
Because they didn't, I mean...
Because it never became a male trendy. Yes. That's very interesting. So you're telling me now that if I go to Eastern Europe or if I go to the old Soviet Union states or in the Arab world, I would actually find more women in computers and tech and...
I think the best percentage, maybe it's in Saudi Arabia, like something, 70% are women.
In Saudi Arabia?
Yes.
Wow. Okay, so there's a benchmark that we need to... Wow. Okay. Okay. That I find that very interesting. I always would have thought that the industry would appeal to women more because, as we've seen over the last 100 years since World War II, more and more men were no longer fighting. Okay, so more and more men are in the offices, are in the industry, are on the factory floors, and women were slowly pushed back into the households, going against the change. I would have thought that women no longer being the leaders of these industries would have just by default, because they're at home, and I'm really simplifying things, because they are at home, that they were the ones that would be driving the social media networks, that they would be the ones using tech to communicate with their networks, with their friends, with their families, with their children, that they will be the ones that will be leading the drive to mobile phone innovations because it suits them. But as we know with many things like architecture and social reforms and all that, it tends to be male-dominated and addressing male needs. So I find it interesting that women haven't managed to crack that drive.
There are a lot of factors. We are always simplifying, but yeah. women are using technology. But technology, and it's very, you don't get it as a man, okay? Mm-hmm. But it's built by men for men. For example, yeah. take something very simple, like the iPhone, mm-hmm. and you have Siri, okay? Mm-hmm. The first version of Siri, if you said, I'm having a heart attack, it will give you a full list of what you should do. But if you say something like, my husband is abusing me, it will say, I don't know what that is.
Yeah.
And then the first version of Apple Health, mm-hmm. It could track, you know, the level of alcohol in your blood, but not the female, the female circle. So it was more important to track. I don't know how many people needed to know how much alcohol there is in their blood.
Yeah.
But not something that 50% of the population has.
51% of the population.
I don't know. Yeah. And then you take something very simple like voice recognition. Mm-hmm. It recognizes male voices much, much better than women voices.
Like you said, it's male created for male.
Yeah. It's a training data. Yeah.
But look, let's say we understand that the men are the ones creating the tech, that they're the ones driving the software and the data and the programming and everything. Now, excuse my terminology because I'm not a techie, you know that. Sorry. Okay. I'm speaking simple terms now. Even if the men are driving this, and I understand that they're going to have priority for men's needs, but at the end of the day, the dollar is what matters. So if I know that 51% of the population want their menstrual cycles calibrated according to the tech and monitored by the tech.
They don't get it because it's not in their head.
Yeah, but you would think that after speaking to one person, one woman, and wouldn't the penny drop where you would say, there's a major market share that I could tap into and make money. I mean, forget the sex of the person that's using it. The money that can be made.
Only about 2% of the venture capital funds go to women. Mm-hmm. So the women are not getting across their message. You know, they go, they say, I have this idea.
Yep.
They will pitch to a male VC. The VC mm-hmm. doesn't get their point because mm-hmm. he's a man. And then, you know, it's... So they, yeah.
What are some ways you could tackle that? Could you introduce a, for example, a panel ruling that says that every time there is a venture capital bids being made, that there has to be at least 30% women on the board or 50% women on the board, or that could help?
They do this with the European funds, for example, mm-hmm. but most venture capital funds are private companies, so you cannot really make them, you know, mm-hmm. it's private money.
Mm-hmm.
It's your own money. You are allowed to invest them to where you feel, you know.
So the only way for now is basically to raise awareness, raise attention to it, encourage the fashionability of the reality of women in the world. Okay, all right. And basically that comes back to what you're doing.
Yeah,
you're
that's the point. Yeah. We need to increase awareness that, mm-hmm. you know, it's not... that women cannot do it.
Yeah.
They invent in the field. So, you know.
Do you have, do you ever get any feedback from your guests as to once they've come to you and they've talked about something that people in the outside world have gone, wow, I didn't know you were doing that. It's so great that, like, or are they known in the community?
There are women that are also in the tech world. So, you know, what they do. They are, you know, they exist.
Yeah,
you know, they are a minority, we are a minority, but we exist.
No, okay, fair enough. I understand that. Because I would also be wondering if they're not, if you're needing to bring them to the forefront, okay, and you're exposing them to the listener, let me rephrase the question. Your audience,
mm-hmm.
Do you get analytics of who your audience is, who's listening? Is it men? Is it women? Is it? Or is it people already in the show?
It's more men than women, actually, from the analytics,
okay.
Which is interesting.
Which might not be a bad thing, considering that we're trying to raise awareness to men.
There is a technology focus, mm-hmm. so I guess it's sort of logical. Although mm-hmm. it's not like 80-20, maybe it's 60-40.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe there are more men interested to something that's technology focused. I don't know. I don't have the answer.
Okay. Now, I know that recently you were voted as one of the Forbes Women in Tech in Cyprus, and we're very proud of you for that, and congratulations.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit more about that. How did they discover you?
Basically, I got nominated.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, they had this open call for nomination,
mm-hmm.
and a good friend of mine, he nominated me.
He?
Yes.
Very nice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So he nominated me, and... Mm-hmm. Basically, they went through a selection process. Also, mm-hmm. they had some judges that they came from other countries. They were in other Forbes list,
mm-hmm.
or they were editors for Forbes, mm-hmm. and they went through a selection process. They were, I think
you said 80. I remember 80
nominations, and they selected 20 women.
Mm.
Although, I'll be honest. Most of the winners were not Cypriots, so they were, you know. Women that came here and they're having their career here and it's great, but I think the message didn't go out well to the Cypriots. So I would like to see more Cypriots next year.
It's interesting you say that because I've noticed that with a lot of award ceremonies where you see the award. I mean, look, at the end of the day, anyone that's living in Cyprus or working out of Cyprus, sure, they can be valid candidates.
Of course.
But I do notice that Cypriots, in Australia, we call it the tall poppy syndrome, meaning that the minute the poppy grows up, somebody comes and cuts it down, and usually it's our own selves doing it. And I think Cypriots are like that. I think Cypriots will be reluctant to either self-nominate or nominate another friend or peer because of this whole pride and shame or like an embarrassment or something or like, you know, or they just literally don't believe that they're worthy of it. And the foreigners that live and work in Cyprus are used to these kind of award ceremonies and the value in them
mm-hmm.
for progressing your career and your publicity. So they, I won't use the word aggressively, assertively. They assertively apply for these awards and they succeed. And fair enough, good on them, they've done it. Maybe we need to educate Cypriot people and especially Cypriot women on assertiveness to be a little bit more aggressive.
Yeah, you know? I mean, yeah. Also most of the nominations were, you know, non-Cypriot. So
yeah.
You see, you are right.
Yeah. I mean, and I'm sure that in the tech industry of Cyprus, it's not dominated by foreigners. I'm sure it's dominated by Cypriots. Or?
No, if you go to Limassol, it's dominated by foreigners. It depends.
Resident foreigners or foreigners that come for these jobs?
They come from the jobs. And it's, you know, these companies, they aggressively, you know, bring people here, which is only logical because they need workers and we don't have enough in Cyprus. We don't produce enough. So that's the solution. They bring people from, you know, Ukraine, Russia.
I think it's the same thing we see in the forex industry as well. It's exact same patterns where foreigners are coming. You made me think of that when you said Ukrainians and Russians. Would you also say that Cyprus as an island, as a state, do you think that the tech industry is growing here? Is Cyprus starting to realize the value of this and that it's appealing to foreign workers to come here?
Yes, of course.
Yeah, and that's great because I think this is a very new phenomenon, yeah?
Okay, so the foreigners is in Limassol, they are, you know, I guess 10 years it started and maybe in the last 3-4 years, especially after the war, the war in Ukraine, it became more intense. So that part is new, yes. But the tech industry in Cyprus goes back to the 80s. We have startups, and we have startups that started here in Cyprus, and they succeeded. Unfortunately, we also have a lot of Cypriots that went abroad to succeed. But but it's growing. We have a good ecosystem right now.
Do you think that that's changing as well? Because as the world becomes more digital and people don't need to be in London or in New York and all these places that are all Tokyo, whatever the traditional headquarters of these industries are, as it becomes more common to remote work, digitally work, you could be anywhere in the world now. So Cyprus being quite an appealing place to live. I mean, it's small, the weather is great, the food is great, it's safe, it's underpopulated compared to the region. So do you think that also helps the industry grow where people can come from the Ukraine and other places, live in Cyprus, have all the creature comforts that the island offers, but not have to get a Cypriot salary so they can actually work in the tech industry, get foreign, you know, employment and so forth? Do you think this is also...
It helps. Let me tell you that, first of all, there is a group of people, including me, that in the last 10 years, they were very, very hard to, you know, lobby the government, to create the environment, the culture, and to create the infrastructure that allowed tech companies here in Cyprus to, you know, to create your tech company here in Cyprus, because it's not just the salary. You need to have venture capital funds. You need to have access to the market. You need a lot of things. And right now we're in a very good place. On top of that, they come here and they immediately have access to the whole European Union, the European market. And we have also very good IP laws here in Cyprus. So there is also that appeal.
What's an IP law?
Intellectual property.
Okay. We have very good, as in Cyprus or European Union has?
In Cyprus.
Okay, that's
interesting. And also there is the matter of the taxation here in Cyprus.
Of course, the taxation has always been the appeal of Cyprus, other than the weather. I always said it's the weather and tax that brings people here. I would like to add food to that. Okay, coming back to the awards, your other colleagues and peers that were awarded, I won't talk about the candidates, there's a big group, but the ones that were awarded, what industry exactly were they working in? Like, are we talking about, were they programmers? Were they, help me with the tech world, because.
Most of these women, they were founders. Okay. So they either create a company or they are very high up in the leadership of a company. There is a lot of fintech. Yeah, of course. There was in the gaming industry.
Okay.
So there is a variety.
When you say gaming, I know that Cyprus now has casinos.
Video gaming.
Okay, I wanted to clarify. We're talking about video gaming. Okay, because I know that we also have, for example, if it's not the headquarters, at least one of the biggest offices of Wargaming, which is a massive industry.
We have other companies as well, yes, but also Wargaming.
Yeah, but coming to actual casino gaming, I know that Malta makes millions or billions on casino gaming, which is involving a lot of, you know, obviously they've got to deal with Forex, they've got to deal with online tech programming, you name it. Cyprus doesn't do, as far as I know, online casino gaming.
There are companies here in Cyprus that do that.
Yeah.
It's kind of a secret, not a secret, but there are companies that do that.
Okay, yeah, because if legislation, if they were to regulate that and open that up to the market, that also could be a potential huge economic bonanza for the island, like it is for Malta.
I mean, for at least for the forex industry, we, you know, we did very well and we adjusted very well and we regulated very well. Okay, I mean, it's high stakes, you know.
Yep.
People can lose a lot of money, but we, you know, I think we handle it pretty well.
Well, that's good to hear. I like hearing some positive things from time to time, which is really good.
No, people still lose money.
No, of course.
But, you know, I think, look, overall, it's handled quite well.
Okay, no, that's good to hear. That's good to hear. Now, you and I, with your husband, Michalis, Michael Sturthos, you have a company.
Yeah.
What's the name of the company?
Cocoon Creations.
Cocoon Creations. How did that come about? When did it come about?
So we started the company in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
And basically it's a software development agency.
Mm-hmm.
And we started off with mobile applications. So back then, the App Store, the Apple App Store was quite new. Google was just trying to figure out stuff. The Google Play didn't even exist. Android was not exactly popular back then. Mm-hmm. But we saw that this is an up-and-coming thing, and we knew that nobody in Cyprus specializes in that. So we started the company to, you know, to create mobile applications for, you know, anybody that was interested in that. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the company grew. Now we do a lot of other stuff. So it's custom software development in general.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's a company.
So when you say, you were creating apps.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody, whether they're Cypriot or foreigner, they come to you and they say, okay, I've got an idea for an app. Can you guide them from step one right through to the end? Like you can create the infrastructure needed to make this app happen.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. What kind of apps have you worked on? I mean, I don't know if you're allowed to name any of them, but...
I won't name clients, we work... basically, it can be anything. We have a lot that are in the fintech industry. We have retail. We had games for a while, but not anymore. So, you know, there is a variety of industries, and some of these clients are startups.
Mm-hmm.
Some of these startups, actually, for example, I'll name one because they kind of exited it. So I don't know if you ever heard of StageDoor.
Yes, I have.
So StageDoor, they came to us when they were, you know, a new company, nothing there. We created the first version of the app, and we supported it for a while until they grew to, you know, a size that they could hire their own people.
Mm-hmm.
We handed it over and, you know, it grew and grew. And eventually they sold the company now.
Okay.
So that's a big success story.
Now, when you started working on apps 12 years ago, you're right, you would have been at the forefront, right at the starting point of this industry, which is now a multi-trillion-dollar industry globally. In Cyprus, has the market grown? Is there a lot more people doing this as well? Or?
There are a lot of companies that claim that they do this, specializing in this. I think we're the only ones.
The only ones specializing. Because I must admit that speaking
but
to
there
some,
are a lot of companies that have this expertise along with other expertise.
Would you say that most clients in Cyprus reach out to foreign operators to create their apps because of they're not aware that you exist, or they actually do come to you? Like,
no,
do you,
a lot of them come to us.
Yeah, okay. I mean, like I said, I'm really excited about this discussion because I'm talking about an industry that I'm unfamiliar with, and you know this about me, that I'm not very tech savvy, so I'm actually fascinated by this. Now, Cocoon's been around for 12 years. You started off with apps.
Yeah.
What have you moved into now? What other industries is that the world? Other columns on the app?
Okay, so basically we could do custom software development. It means that we can create all the components you need to, you know, start or build your software. So it can be the mobile app, a website, the back office, the integrations with other systems.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that you need to operate, you know.
You can do things like create payroll systems and...
Actually, we do.
Yes.
So actually, one of our products, this is an in-house product, it's called Crew. And basically, it's an HR and payroll platform.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, somebody can, it's a software as a service, which means that you can buy it for your company and you can, you know, manage absences, shifts, payroll, mm-hmm. time and attendance.
And so the client that uses this program, they pay like a membership or they buy it? Or how does it work?
It's per month. It's a, you know, it's a subscription per month.
Mm-hmm. And they operate it and you guys are there as tech support if they need help or don't understand how to use it.
Yeah, you know. Yeah.
How big is your team now?
It's 15 people.
15 people. Nicosia based?
Not all of them. Okay. Most of them are remote.
Most of them are remote in Cyprus?
In Cyprus, and you know, we have people from other countries as well.
That's amazing. You work in English, I take it? Or yes. Do you operate in Greek? I'm assuming you must do Greek as well, having local clients that need some Greek.
Yeah, I mean, most of the business is in English, yeah. But if you are talking to a Cypriot, and there are only Cypriots in the room, obviously, we speak Greek.
The reason why I ask this question is that, like, if you're programming something, like a HR system or whatever, mm-hmm. and you're using the English language, I mean, again, stupid question, what language is code?
The programming languages are only English.
Okay, so it's in English regardless. Well, okay,
yeah,
okay, okay.
Yeah, but you know, the user interface, you know, the buttons and the stuff, it can be in any languages. We did apps in like, the most interesting one are the right to left, like Arabic, or we had some clients in Israel, and then everything is reversed and you have to look at it and... Okay.
So I guess, I mean, for the user interface that you mentioned, the user will see on their screen or on their phone or whatever, Arabic, Hebrew, English, Russian, whatever. But that's not actually what's happening at the back.
Yeah? No.
That's all in English code, right?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Now, that's interesting to know. So I'm learning something here. I hope people listening are learning something because I admit and I repeat this again and again, I am at ground zero when it comes to technology. I can turn on a computer. I can use Microsoft Office. I apparently can podcast, but that's about all I can do. So I'm always learning. Where do you think the next generation of kids are going? What do they need to be tech savvy today? Because I think that I came through the last generation that wasn't taught in school how to do anything, whether to do with programming. I mean, like, we were lucky to learn Word for Windows. I mean, I can honestly say that we used typewriters in early high school. I mean, that's where I am. So today's kids, are they teaching them programming? Are they teaching them software development in school as a part of the curriculum?
Actually, even in the primary school, they do computers. They teach them, you know, how to use the computer, how to use the internet, and they do basic programming. Mm-hmm. And depending on the teachers, because we have some great teachers here, you know, they can learn a lot more. For example, I have a friend, Alexandros Kofteros, and he's a primary school teacher, and he's using AI to teach the classroom.
Yeah, no, I've seen him online. He's a Facebook friend, and I'm fascinated with the work he's doing with bringing the kids to the modern era. And I think it's not just about teaching the kids, though. It's about teaching their parents, because their parents are my generation. And I'm telling you now, when my daughters come home and they start talking about coding and programming and software development, I'm going to be lost. So I'm hoping that people like Mr. Kofteros are going to be right there helping me understand how to work with my kids on this.
You don't need to understand this.
No,
per se.
It's too late for me.
No, I mean, you can go online and find it. There is a programming language for kids. It's called Scratch. It's the perfect, you know, thing for somebody like Thalia, your daughter, and you can learn together.
Okay, Scratch.
Yes.
Okay, okay. Before I forget, how can people find you at Cocoon? What's your website?
It's cocooncreations.net.
Cocoon Creations, one word? cocooncreations.net.
Yes.
Okay, no, that's great. Now, I mean, I have been fascinated watching Cocoon develop over the years, and one of my prime memories of Cocoon was, I don't know, it was pre-pandemic, so it's at least 6-7 years ago. You sent out cupcakes at Christmas.
I think that would be almost, it was the first couple of years.
Okay, it's been that long, has it? Okay. to this day, this was one of your best marketing tools ever. Don't tell me that you can do things online. And those cupcakes that you sent out to people, I can still see them. The blue icing, the little cocoon chocolate on top.
It was when we didn't have that many clients who could do that. And now it's not that easy.
Now you need a bakery of yourself. Yeah. Well, look, this is great. I'm really happy to see that this is going. What's the next steps? Not just in Cocoon Creations, but what's the next steps for you as a person, as Elena, what's your next steps? Where do you see the next 10 years?
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Obviously I'm at Cocoon. We want to grow the company, mm-hmm. Grow it to, get bigger projects, more interesting projects. But I think another thing is that because I started the podcast when I was young, I really didn't pay attention to all the inequalities and, mm-hmm. everything that is happening and the sexism in the industry. And now that I'm getting older, I'm getting pissed by it.
Yep.
So I think I would like to, see and help with, fix this, at least in Cyprus, a little bit fixing this.
Well, that's it. Everything you do at home affects the world, doesn't it? I mean, you're not going to go and help Germany or Sweden or Bangladesh. I mean, like, your job is Cyprus. And
yeah.
If you succeed in Cyprus, then by default, that can spread. So contributing to the 20% growing, hopefully you rename the podcast to Breaking the 30%, and then we make it Breaking the 40% until we get to 50. Then we stop, because then we're going to have to turn the program around for the men.
I mean, there are enough men, and we want more men, because actually right now one of the big problems is that there are not enough people that have this skill.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody's trying to hire, and nobody can find enough people that are skilled. So we don't want the men to leave. We just want more people, more men, and the women.
Is this also why you see in places like Washington State and in other countries, programmers and techies get paid so well? Is because there's such a small market of staff and experts in this field?
It's part of it, I guess. It's part of it. It's surely part of this, yes.
Also, I know that from some clients that I work with, they use staff in Colombia, in South America, because they have a lot of talented, skilled animators, VR creators, back-end operators. Of course, they're cheaper than, the States and Canada and Europe and whatnot.
It's the how much money do you need to live in New York or in San Francisco, and how much do you need in Colombia, of course.
And that's the thing. It's also to be able to pay them fairly. And the same in India. I mean, like, it started 20 years ago where all the call centers in the West, you would call and you'd get English-speaking Indians, And that's fine. I mean, the way I see it, it's like foreign aid that actually goes to the people that need it.
Mm-hmm.
Because when states give other states funding, a lot of it goes into the pockets of the wrong people. A lot of it gets corrupted and watered out. And by the time it actually gets to the grassroots, it's dissipated. Now, I think the European Union led the way with the European Neighborhood Policy, where they would rather the monies for funding went to the people on the ground and not through the governments, especially when there's corrupt ones. And I see this the same with tech industry, where Western companies can hire people, whether it's in Colombia or in India or whatever, and that money goes directly to the person that's working for you and their family on the ground in these countries. And what happens in the long run? Others in their community benefit from it. Others in their community then start having a demand for education in programming or whatever industry it is. It could be anything. Like I said, 20 years ago, it was call centers, So it changes the education structures there. And then from the bottom up, you start improving the conditions in these countries. Now, that's just talking about the conditions in these countries. But I think, coming back to the issue of women, not saying that women are better off or worse off in the West, but we know that in the developing world, women tend to be the front line of affected negatively by things. So by doing this foreign direct investment, so to speak, into the individuals, you can have women in India and Colombia. And actually, I use this example because the partners in Colombia, most of them are actually women, the staff.
Yeah, because yeah. I told you in the beginning,
yes,
you know, it's a Western world problem.
Yeah.
You know, if you go to, to you know, the Middle East, or I guess it's the same in Colombia. I don't know about Colombia per se, but if you go to, you know, former Soviet Union countries, it's not like that.
But the point I'm making is that, like in Colombia, you have more women in the tech industry, which is great. That's great. But you're actually able to inject income directly to the woman in these countries, as opposed to the man who, it's been proven globally, it doesn't spread as evenly and as far when it's at the hands originating with men versus women. So women in the third world can not only lead the tech change and tech development world, but can also lead the way to economic improvement in their countries, which is power.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, look, and I think that will happen in Cyprus too. Cause I mean, like, my wife is a good example. My wife, Cypriot, works in Cyprus, but works for an American company. Yeah. So this is American dollars coming to Cyprus. Tax from that is going to the Cypriot government. And my wife is holding that income and it's in her control. Now, I'd like to believe that we're fair with our incomes and my income versus her income. But this is a good example of other women in Cyprus that could be in control of their income. And at the end of the day, when women are economically empowered, they're empowered across the field in all industries. Men have been privy to that for a long time. It's time to change. Not change, even up.
You know, the misconception that women are not good in technology, it's all stereotypes. You know, women started this, women excel in this, they have these skills and they can, you know, acquire these skills. So there is no reason not to go into this, except from the fact that women go to study computer science and they have faced so much prejudice and the environment is toxic. And there is sexism, and they say, okay, why am I doing this? So they pull out. But if you go to a country that they have less right, then they have more of an incentive to stay because it gives them money. It gives them status.
Look, I've learned a lot talking with you today because you blew me away with the whole that women for so long led this, and even to the 80s. I mean, I had no idea. So it's something that women should be very proud of, and it's something that men should really acknowledge.
But it's also written out of history. So you know, you go and you read the books, and it's about the men, about the men who built the machine, but it's not about the women who programmed the machines. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there is... So in the UK, in the 40s, there was this computer called the Colossus, okay? Mm-hmm, yep. And it was part of the effort to, you know, against the Nazis. Mm-hmm. And every single, I think there were about 150 women that were the, you know, the operators and the programmers of this machine. And they were all women. And until the mid-90s, it was top secret. And if they were asked what they did in the world, they were supposed to say that they were secretaries.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Silenced officially until the 90s.
Yeah.
Incredible, incredible. Look, I mean, I hope that Hollywood and Netflix and whatnot wake up and start delivering this, because at the end of the day, and I come back to that point I made earlier, 51% of their clientele are women.
Yeah.
And we want to see that. And it's the same. I mean, we can go on and on about women in the industry and women in different fields. But again, it comes down to women superheroes, women cartoons, women in books. You know, it's such a field that needs to catch up, because we have daughters, we have mothers, we have sisters, we have wives. We need representation across the board. And tech is no different. So...
Yeah, I mean, if you get Thalia, for example, and she says, I want to, you know, play with a computer, and then somebody says to you, but that's not what girls do, then you turn her away.
Yeah.
But if she sees that a lot of women do that, you say, well, they are doing it. Why am not? No, not me.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, look, on that note, I want to thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you for, I know how busy your schedule is, and I know that as a podcaster yourself, I mean, the last thing you want to do is put the headphones on and be on someone else's show. But thank you so much for coming.
No, it was fun.
I really appreciate it. And I actually learned a lot. I knew I was going to learn, but I didn't realize I was going to learn this much. So thank you. I want to have you back again sometime in the future. So keep that open in mind, in your mind. And again, visit cocooncreations.net for all of your needs, because I know I can vouch for the company is great. I've seen the work they've done. And so again, thank you so much. And the podcast. So
it's called Breaking the 20%.
Breaking the 20%.
It's on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, in Google Podcasts. Just, you know, Google it.
Brilliant.
Or go to Spotify and you'll find it.
Brilliant. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Gustav.
The first trilingual podcast station of Cyprus. Island Talks. Open. Diverse. Free.